Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Chof Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur 6 lines from the top of Daf Chof Aleph. The Gemara opens up with a description of something miraculous in the Beis HaMikdash in terms of the room available for the multitudes for bowing. Bowing was something that would take place in the Beis HaMikdash, and being that there were multitudes, how much room was available? So, our Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. Bishal Shisrael Oilin L'Regel. When the Jews fulfilled their holiday pilgrimage, Oindin Tzfufim, they stood in a crowded fashion. Tzfufim means tightly packed in. Umishtachvim revochim, and they would bow, and there would be a lot of room. Revach means space. V'nimshochim achas esrei amo achurei beis hakaporas, and the crowd would extend, filling the entire temple courtyard, including the 11 amos that were on the far side, to the west of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When we learn Maseches Yuma, make references to different structural elements in the Beis HaMikdash, by all means make reference to the Beis HaMikdash diagram that we supplied along with the beginning of the Masechta on that base. So the comment we just made is not easy to understand, because it says that when they were standing, they were stuffed in, they were packed in. Then when they bowed, there was a lot of room. Now, if there was a lot of room when they bowed, so why was it necessary for them to go and extend to the far side to fill up the entire Azora? So the Gemara says, well, we didn't present it quite accurately. The Gemara's question of my Komar, we just presented the question as if they bowed with a lot of room, so then what forced them to go behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what we call Achorei Beis HaKapores? So the Gemara answers, Hochi Ko'omar. The statement should be understood thusly. Afal pi shenim shochem achas esrei amo Achorei Beis HaKapores v'omdim tzfufim. Even though there was such a large crowd that forced them to fill the Azora, including the area behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, behind the Beis HaKaporos, and even so, they were still standing in a congested, tight, packed fashion. Kishehein mishtachem and mishtachem irvochim. When they bowed, and there was plenty of room for them to prostrate themselves out on the floor. V'zeh echod me'asora nisim shenasu b'mikdash. And this was one of 10 miracles that took place in the Beis HaMikdash. On the side, we introduce this section of Gemara with our no sour topic heading, Asora nisim dehoyu b'Beis HaMikdash. So the source begins enumerating miracles. We should point out that this discussion concerning miracles and how many there were and what they were continues down Omid Beis as well. So the source begins, Asura Nisim Nasu Beis HaMikdash, 10 miracles were performed or took place in the Beis HaMikdash. Lo Hipila Isha Mireach Basar HaKodesh. Literally, or translation is, a woman would not miscarry, even though there was the very pleasant and attractive smell of the sacrifices being consumed in the fire of the Beis HaMikdash. So, just a little elaboration on that. A pregnant woman who becomes very desirous of something, this could be a basis or a source of endangerment to the child she's carrying. In fact, we know that there are certain laws of leniency in the laws regarding Yom Kippur and a woman who is pregnant. So this was miraculous that the woman would never miscarried, even though she would experience this very seductive smell of the sacrificial meat being offered. Number two, velo hisriach basar hakodesh meolam, sacrificial meat never rotted. Number three, velo nira zvuv bebeis hamidbochayim, and a fly was never seen in the slaughter area of the Beis HaMikdash. Number four, velo ira keri l'koyin gadol b'yom HaKippurim, a male emission never issued forth, never took place with regard to the Kohen Gadol and his service on Yom Kippur. As we've been explaining in previous Dapim, we were concerned that the Kohen Gadol remained Tohar, and we strove to keep him awake all night so as not to experience this. So, in fact, over all the years of the Beis HaMikdash, he never experienced Keri. Velo nimtza psul, a disqualifying factor, was never found ba'oimer u'b'shtei alechem u'b'lechem aponim. These are different types of grain offerings, meal offerings, and Rashi points out how important it was that this miracle takes place, that there was never a psul that afflicted or affected the Omer. The Omer was brought on the 16th of Nisan, right after the first day of Pesach, and it was the first grains to be harvested of the new crop, so that if anything would have happened to the Omer, there wasn't any time to find any replacement for that which became pusel. And likewise, with regard to the Shtei Alechem, they were baked. The two loaves brought on Shavuos were baked Erev Shavuos. And if something, and they were brought to the Beis HaMikdash on Shavuos itself, and their baking is not allowed to be done on Shavuos. It had to be baked Erev Shavuos. So if anything would happen to make the Shnei Alechem posel, so they would have no way of replacing it. And the same thing with regard to the Lechem Haponim. The Lechem Haponim was distributed on Shabbos, and it had to sit on the table from Shabbos to Shabbos. And if any disqualifying factor would set in to the Lechem Aponim, that was it was baked on a standard basis. It was baked on a Friday, and if any psul would happen, so the shulchan would remain without any breads for an entire week. Number eight, oimden tzvufim u'shtachem revochim. This we made reference to before. Even though while standing, they were standing very crowded, when they needed to bow, the public was able to bow with space. Number nine, velo hizik nochosh ve'akrov b'yushalayim me'olam. Nor snakes, nor scorpions ever inflicted damage in Jerusalem. And number 10, velo omar odom l'chavero tsar li hamokom she'olin b'yushalayim. Here's another example of lack of room, and with regard to Jerusalem, people never said that there was no room for me to sleep, even though we're talking about three times a year, the masses of Jews came from all over to celebrate the holiday, the Aliyas HaRegel, in Yerushalayim. No one ever said that I didn't have any room to sleep. The Gemara now comments on this source, Pasach B'Mikdash. The source opened up with 10 miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, V'Sim Yerushalayim, and it ends off. Actually, there, you don't find 10 in the Beis HaMikdash, you find 8 in the Beis HaMikdash. 9 and 10 were Jerusalem associated. So the Gemara says, okay, you just said we're missing two. Ikotarti achrinaisu b'mikdash. Well, I have two more for the Beis HaMikdash, so we'll replace the two that are missing. Desanya, the Tanaic source, features two more miracles. Me'olam lo kavu gishomim eish shel atze hamorocha. It never happened that rain ever extinguished the fires of the wood in the on the temple, on the altar fireplace, so that even though it may have rained, the fire continued burning, the fire of the altar that stood in the open courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Number two, the Oshon HaMarocha, the smoke rising from the altar fireplace, Afilu Kol HaRuchos Shebo'i L'Boi Sumen Ashvois Boi, even if all the winds of the world would come and blow, Ein Mezizos Oisoi Mimakomo, it wouldn't push or budge the smoke from its spot. In other words, the smoke continued to rise and not be affected by the winds blowing. There is more to say on this topic, which Mirtz Hashem will get to later. But we see two more miracles. Now the Gemara has a series of questions. We've highlighted them with our diamond, one of our series markings. And you'll see that this series extends till the upper part of Omid Beis as well. And on the side, under our Mivne heading, Vesulo, are there no others? These are Kushos al ho dekotoni liel dehoyu rak asoro nisa beis hamikdash rei roim shohoyu yoser. Why do you, before we said there were only 10 miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, but behold, we see there were more. So the Gemara asks, and of course, what we'll have to do at each stage is, after asking the question, we'll have to explain why were these additional miracles not counted? Why did the source say there were only 10? So the Gemara asks, on the first wide line at this diamond, it asks, Vesu Leka, were there no others? V'hatanya Rav Shmaya Mikalnebo, Kalnebo is a place, Rav Shmaya from that place, says, Shivrei Klecheres Nivloin B'mekoimon. Broken pieces of clayware. These are the clayware referred to here, the clay vessels, are those vessels that were used for boiling. They were used as pots for boiling kotshe kotshim, or meat of sacrifices of a high holiness category. And the absorption that takes place into these clay pots is taste that's absorbed into the walls, and that becomes forbidden, known as noser. Noser is that which is left beyond the allotted time for eating a sacrifice. So what do you do with vessels that have now absorbed that which is forbidden? So the halacha says, and Rashi quotes this, they need to be smashed. And the smashing takes place in the Azora, because we're dealing with Kotche Kotchim. Kotche Kotchim is a type of sacrifice that can't leave the Beis HaMikdash. Well, what does it say in this source? It says that the Shivrei Klicheres Nivloim B'mkom, they were absorbed into the ground, absorbed where they were placed. If they wouldn't be absorbed, you know, we're talking over the course of hundreds of years, you would have mountains of broken shards accumulating in the Azora. So miraculously, they were absorbed into the ground. The Omar Abaye, notice we have a number two, another miracle. Murav v'noitzav v'dishon mizbeach ha'pnimi v'dishon ha'menorah. There's a number of items mentioned here. The murav v'noitzav are a reference to the innards of a bird offering, of an olas ha'of. An olas ha'of was a bird offering was completely burnt, and its innards along with the Dishun Mizbechmini. This is the ash from the golden altar that was used for spice offerings. The Keturis was offered there. The ash from that Mizbeach is the Dishun Mizbech HaPanimi. The Dishun HaMenorah, this is a reference to the ash and the charcoal residue from the menorah. Now all of these items also Nivloin Bimakoman were also miraculously absorbed into the ground. So the question is, why were these not counted in the list? So up till now we have accounted for 10 miracles because we added the lo kavu gishomim eisho asher marocha and the winds not affecting the asher marocha. But what about these two more? So the Gemara answers, psuli tlosahavu. If you use the arrow to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara, you'll notice a line above where there's another a corresponding arrow where it mentions that there was never found a psul in the oimer shtelechem and lechem upon him. Instead of counting them as we did, as three separate things, three separate examples, count them just as one. So the psuli tlosahavu. Above we mentioned the psulim as three examples. Chashvinu b'chad, count them as not three but as one. So I'm losing then two from that. So apik trey, I take out two. The ayol trey, and I replace those two missing with these two. The shivrei cheres and what Abaye says, Rav Notz Vedishin, etc., were absorbed into the place. The Gemara says, well, if you are condensing lists by virtue of the fact that they have something in common, well, liyachi bluin nami trey havu. These two examples of that which is absorbed, the Shivrei Kli Cheres and the Mura Venotza, etc., were absorbed. They were counted as two. Chashvinu b'chad, count them as one. Have them merge into one example. Chosru lu, now I'm missing one from my list of ten. So the Gemara answers, Iko nami achriti. Don't worry, we have another miracle. The Yomar Bishua ben Levi, Neis Godol Hoyo, Nase b'lechem aponim. There was a major miracle that was associated with the lechem aponim. Those are the 12 loaves, sometimes translated as the shoe breads, that were in the heichal on the golden table from week to week. Siluko kesiduro. Their removal was like their setting up. What does that mean? Well, when they were set up as fresh breads. They were baked on Friday, just in the next day, as they're still, Shabbos, when they were set up on the table in the Heichal, they're still quite fresh. Now, a week later, they were removed. That's Siluko. A week later, they were removed and distributed to the Kohanim. And they remained fresh an entire week, even though they weren't in a saran wrap, they weren't frozen in a freezer. They remained fresh, even though they were exposed, left there out in the air within the Heichal. Shinemar, and the Pasuk indicates this, Lasum lechem chom biyom hi lokho. It was like, was hot bread, was placed as hot bread as it was when it was removed. So, if our problem was that we lost one from the list because we considered the absorption miracle as only one as opposed to two, replace that missing one with this miracle of the lechem upon him. The Gemara asks, "Vesu leko?" Were there no other miracles? V'omer Rabbi Levi, ze masoros biyodeinu me'avoseinu. Rabbi Levi says that we have the following as a tradition from our forefathers: Mokaim oroin eino min hamida. V'omer avnoi, omer Shmuel kruvim beneis hoyu omdin. There are two miracles here that have to do with space. Items that existed, but after making calculations, we discover that though they were there, they didn't take up any space. They were above. Sometimes we speak about being above time. These were above space. Now, what do we mean by that? We know that the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the inner sanctum, the Holy of Holies, which housed the Aron, the Ark, the Holy Ark containing the Ten Commandments, the Luchos HaBris, that Aron was in a room known as the Kodesh HaKodoshim, which measured 20 Amos by 20 Amos. When you would approach the Aron, and let's say you approach it, the edge of the Aron, one of its sides, let's say the right side of the Aron, and measure from that side to the facing wall of the Kodesh HaKodoshim, it would measure 10 Amos. So in our example, you measured from the right side of the Aron to the facing wall, 10 Amos. Now go to the left side of the Aron and measure the distance from that to the facing wall, you'll find another 10 Amos. Measure from wall to wall, you'll find 20 Amos. So something is unbelievable over here. We have the Aron, when you measure from its two sides to the facing walls, you'll get a total of 20 Amos. When the entire width of the room, the Kodesh Hashem, was 20 Amos. So where was the Aron? Didn't it take up any space? So that was the miracle over here, that even though from two of its sides you'll find 10 plus 10, and when you measure the room itself you'll find only 20 Amos, that's a miracle. That's what that means here. The Aron Eino Min Amido. The Aron wasn't part of the... didn't figure in the calculations. The same thing with regard to the Kruvim. The Kruvim were statues that were heavenly ordained to be placed in the Holy of Holies that were built by King Solomon, the Kruvim. And the Kruvim were, say, angelic figures with wings that were spread out. And just for the sake of this Gemara, there's another discussion, a much more involved discussion in Maseches Bava Basra regarding these Kruvim, but making the assumption right now for simplicity purposes that the wings were at the sides of the bodies of these Kruvim. Again, we're dealing with the dimensions of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 Amos by 20 Amos. The extended wing span. Well, each wing measured 5 Amos. You have two statues. That would be a total of 4 wings. Sometimes we can refer to them as wingspans, but 5 Amos for the right-hand side wing, 5 Amos for the left-hand side wing of one statue. The next statue likewise had extended wings, tip to tip. So you would have wings itself would account for 20 Amos. However, the wings in our illustration are attached to the side of the body of the Kruvim. Wouldn't the body thickness or the body width itself add to the dimensions? So if the wings themselves of one Kruv, let's say, take one Kruv for example, the wings accounted for 10 Amos, the body itself would account for a little more, let's say. And now I've got these two statues with their wings extended at 180 degrees and spread across, tip to tip, so you would have to account for more than 20 Amos if you want to calculate the body of the statues as well. But yet, the Kruvim stood with their wings spread out in a room measuring itself 20 by 20. What about the body spots? That was a miracle that it doesn't, that even though they were there physically, they didn't take up any space. Just like we said by the Aron, even there it was there physically, it didn't take up any space. The question then is, why are these not added to the list? Why do we come out with 10 and not include these? So the Gemara answers, Nisi de Baroi, Kochoshev, Nisi de Gavoi, Lo Kochoshev. Baroi means outside. Outside means in the Azorah. Miracles that were associated with the Azorah, we had mentioned, but miracles that are associated with the inside, Gavoy is the inside, and the Heichal, in this case we're talking about the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, those are not miracles that are part of the list. The Gemara asks, well, Ihachi Lechem Aponim Nami, well, the showbreads as well, Nisi de Gavoy Havi, that was an inside miracle, wasn't in the Azorah. The showbreads are kept on the golden table, on the Shulchan, in the hay house. It wasn't something that was in the courtyard. People didn't see that. So the Gemara answers, Lechem aponim nisi de baroi. Now we have an answer that lasts a number of lines, so note the long answer marking that takes you down a number of lines, down six lines from the top of Amud Beis. So the Gemara says that the Lechem aponim miracle in fact was nisi de baroi hu. It was an outside miracle. And what do you mean by that? The Yomer Reish Lakish, my dechtiv. Now, here, in order to get to the punchline, the Gemara gives you background. So we quote a pasuk. It says, "Al Hashulchan HaTahor." The golden table of the Beis Hamikdash is described as the golden table that is tahor. Now, when you say that something is pure, it indicates tor michlal shu tome. It indicates that it's something that could become defiled. The potential for defilement is there. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Now, when you're dealing with vessels and defilement, there are rules that are associated. Not every vessel is actually subject to defilement. Amongst the qualifications, or the we'll say the that restrictions or limitations, involves what the Gemara here refers to as a kli eitz ha'osu l'nachasu, a wooden vessel. Now the shulchan, we mentioned it was gold. It was coated in gold. It was basically a wooden table. It was coated in gold. It was a as such. It's a kli eitz. It's a wooden vessel. Ha'osu l'nachas means it's made for non-movement. It's made to remain in its place. The chol kli eitz ha'osu l'nachas, it's not, in other words, it's not portable. It's not designed to be portable, let's say. It's a kli eitz ha'osu l'nachas. It's a wooden vessel made to be kept in its spot. And the rule is, eino mekabel tuma. The chotz eitz b'fnei ha'tuma. It is something that does not absorb tuma, and if it's placed in a position where it blocks off tuma, it can in fact block tuma from, let's say, passing from one room to another. If you have a kli eitz ha'osu l'nachas blocking the passageway from one room to another, since it itself doesn't absorb tuma, it doesn't serve as a conduit of tuma either. So it's chotzeis b'fnei tuma. So what does the pasuk mean when it describes the shulchan as being tor when it seems that it's a kli eitz ha'osu l'nachas? It's not a portable table. Elam alameit. So the pasuk tells us that there is an element of portability to it. It's not really osu l'nachas. The pasuk teaches us from the fact that it refers to it as tor shemagbien oisei leil regolim. They would actually lift up the shulchan with the lechem aponim on it during the holidays, when the Olei Regolim, when the pilgrimage took place. Olei Regolim literally was those that rose by foot to Yerushalayim, the pilgrimage time. They would pick up the table and show it to those outside. Remember, we are answering a question right now. How can you say that the miracle regarding the Lechem Aponim was a baroi, an external, courtyard-related miracle when the Shulchan was in the Heichal? So here we're explaining. They would pick up the table with the breads on it, bring it to the doorway leading into the Heichal, but although it's a door leading to the Azorah, and show the people the breads, the omrim lohem, re'u chibaschem lefnei amokum, behold your belovedness in the presence of the Almighty, shesiluko kesiduro, the bread upon its removal is like it was when it was set up, i.e., warm and fresh. Shenemar losum lechem chom biyom hilakho. We saw this pasuk quoted earlier. So that shows us that the nace of the lechem upon him deserved to be in the list. And we saw it listed as such. Let's give credit to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who's the one that introduced this, the nace of lechem upon him, as helping to complete the list of 10 miracles. So it was one of the 10 miracles that was a nisa de baroi. Continuing. Question. Notice this question also lasts a number of lines. Vesu leka. Were there no other miracles? V'omar Rav Hoshaya. B'shal shebona shlomi beis hamikdash. At the time that King Solomon built the beis hamikdash, nota boi kol minei megodim shelzov. He planted all kinds of delicacies or trees that were gold. In other words, the expression that money doesn't grow on trees, well, that's that it might be true, but not necessarily always true. There were trees that apparently produced gold. They would produce their fruits on time and in their season. Uksharuach menasheves bohen notion, and when the wind blew, the fruits would fall off. Shenemar yirash kalavonon pirio. Now Rashi explains on the third line from the top, yirash kalavonon pirio. Yirash, yirash has to do with making noise. Yirash pirio shi Yisrael kiperi halavonon. The fruits of Yisrael would be like the fruits of Livanon. Now, Livanon has to do with the Beis HaMikdash. Almo yesh pirei b'Livanon uvon hu Beis HaMikdash. Livanon is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains that Beis HaMikdash cleanses people from their sins. It's malabein. Malabein has to do with whitening something, as you would whiten something that's soiled. So, Livanon is a term used for the Beis HaMikdash, which is a location of penitence and forgiveness. Umau harash, what was the noise referred to in the pasuk? Kshiruach neshevis vein makishin zelazer hashem, when the wind would blow, so these fruits, apparently these golden fruits, would bang one on the other, and rashim v'neshmakol, that would produce the metallic impact of one item on another would produce a noise. So the Gemara continues with Rav Hoshaya's description. Ukshnichsu nochem lehechal yovash, when the plunderers of the Beis HaMikdash, the nochem, the Gentiles, the idol worshippers entered the Beis HaMikdash, they dried out. Shnemar uperach livonon umlal. That pasuk indicates that those fruits ceased to appear. The Osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lachziron, the Kadosh Baruch Hu will restore them. Shnemar Porach Tifrach V'Sogel Af Gilas V'Ranein Kevod Halavonon Nitan Lo. So that pasuk is talking about sometime in the future when they will come back. Then the question is, what about this gold trees producing golden fruits? Why is that mentioned as one of the miracles? The Gemara answers, Nisi de Kavi Lo Kochoshiv. Rashi says, "Dekvi kavuin v'oimdim tomid b'mkoma." Something was permanently affixed in its spot. That was the case of trees with their golden fruits. They were permanently affixed there, so they weren't mentioned in the list. That wasn't what we were interested in mentioning. Something that's a nes kavua. The Gemara points out, "Hashta d'osis lahachi." Now that we've come up with this explanation for why these golden trees weren't mentioned. Well, the issue of the Oron Ukruvim Nami, we were asking, what about the Oron Ukruvim miracle? We have a little star to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see that this is referring you back to Omid Aleph, four lines from the bottom, where the Gemara had raised this issue of Oron and Kruvim, why not mention them as being part of the miracle? The Gemara gave an answer, namely, Nisi de Gavoy lo kochoshiv. But now that you're telling me regarding the trees that we're not counting them because of Nisi de Kavi, regarding the Oron and Kruvim Nami, Nisi de Kavi, you know, they were ongoing, permanent miracles dealing with something that was fixed in its place. The Oron and the Kruvim were fixed in their location in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Omar Mar, the Oson HaMarocha. Again, if you have any trouble locating where this is from, use the markings. An arrow indicating to look back at Omid Aleph. You skim down the page, the Omid Aleph page, find an arrow indicating Omid Beis, and you will see second to last narrow line of the Gemara that there were these miracles concerning the smoke rising from the altar. The Gemara asks, Umi have oshem b'amarocha? He said there was a miracle concerning the smoke rising from the fireplace, but who says there was smoke in the first place? V'hatanya, the following source features 5 points. Notice the next line at the end of the line says, V'eino ma'alosh, and there was no smoke. And we're dealing here with the marocha. So what does it say in the source? Chamish dvorim nemru be'eshel marocha. 5 points were made concerning the fire of the altar, marocha, fireplace. Revutzo ke'ari, it crouched like a lion. Now, Rashi says on the first narrow line, Revutzo ke'ari, gacheles shenoflu min ha-shamayim, b'imei Shlomo, there was a coal that fell from the heavens. In the time of Shlomo, the time of King Solomon, who built the first Beis HaMikdash, v'oiso al mizbeach, and it remained on the altar ad shebo menashe v'suka v'isadoyim elari rovetz. This coal, and it was a hot coal that sat there for hundreds of years. Menashe was a king in the latter part of the first temple. It stood there until he came along and removed it. So it looked like a crouching lion. That's one description. Uvora kechama, it was clear and intense like the sun. V'yesh bo mamash, the fire of the marocha had substance to it. That's something that's quite miraculous. A pillar of fire, generally, if you can put your finger right through the flame of a candle, can't you? Not so in the case of the fire rising from the marocha. It had substance to it. Number 4, v'ocheles lachem kiveshim. It was able to consume wet wood as it is easy to consume dry wood. Yiveshim is dry. And number 5, v'eino ma'aloshan. No smoke came forth from the esh of the marocha. So No smoke came forth from it, so how can you tell us about a miracle affecting the smoke when there was no smoke to begin with? The more answers, ki ko amrinon bedehedyo. When we say that there was smoke, but nevertheless there was also a miracle associated with the smoke, that's referring to the fire that was supplied by us, as opposed to a heavenly-based fire. Desanyo, the Brisa elaborates on this point. That's the pasuk which says that the sons of Aaron placed fire on the altar. Even though there was fire that came from heavens, we described it already. It was a heavenly fire. Mitzvah lahavi minahadyot. There nevertheless is a mitzvah, an obligation for the commoner, for the human being, to provide fire as well. So you have a conceptual idea represented here, where it's true that the Almighty produces miracles, but as far as our daily existence, we don't rely on miracles. We have to do something on our own. That's, again, an idea that you could expand upon based on this source. The Gemara, after having answered that question concerning smoke and saying there was smoke, but that's from the fire, that's from the fire that we supplied, as opposed to the fire that was coming from as opposed to the fire from the that was of a heavenly origin, it didn't produce any smoke. We mentioned Revutzo Ke'ari, that the heavenly fire appeared as the coal producing the heavenly fire, that coal was crouched like a lion. Question: V'atanyom Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohenim. Rabbi Chanina tells us, Ani Ro'isa, I saw the fire, Revutzo Ke'kelev, it was crouched like a dog. Lo Kashya, Kan v'Mikdash Rishon, Kan v'Mikdash Sheni. In the first temple, it appeared like a crouching lion. In Mikdash Sheni, in the second temple, which was less in significance, so it was like a dog. The Gemara asks a question, and this question lasts a number of lines. So it asks, Uva Mikdash Sheni Mihavoi, and in the second temple, was there any heavenly fire to begin with? And as we're saying that there was a heavenly fire that was produced from a coal that looked like a crouching dog, but there wasn't any heavenly fire. V'omar Rav Shmuel bar Inyo, my dichtiv. Rav Shmuel says, what is the meaning of this pasuk? In that, we're going to read a pasuk, three words, but we're not really so much looking at the words, but more the spelling. The pasuk says, ve'ertze bo ve'ekovda. Now, in our Gemara markings, we wrote in the vowels. However, in a traditional scroll, traditional Tanakh that's not written it's handwritten like you would write a Sefer Torah, so there are no vowels in the letters. So this word, the Ekovda, without vowels, you would have read it as something else, the Ekoved, the Karinon, and yet we read it as if it has a hay in it. See, the word without the vowels and without a hay would not lead us to read it as Ve'ekovda. But we do. V'karina Ve'ekovda. Mai shno de mechuser hay. So why in the traditional text is the hay missing? The hay that really enables us to read it as Ve'ekovda. So that's how we read it. We read it as if there were a hay there, but it's missing. So why is that? The Gemara explains that we should have pointed out that this pasuk ve'ertzevov ve'ekovda is a pasuk referring to the second Beis Hamikdash. So you have a reference to the second Beis Hamikdash with a word missing a hay. So the hay has a numerical value of 5. Elu chamisha dvorim shehoyu bein mikdash rishon the mikdash sheni. This is a reference to 5 points of difference between the first temple and the second temple. The Eluhain, and the following are the 5 points that we have to focus on the main question, and we use a dashed underline. See, point number 2 is relevant to our discussion. Well, what were the 5 differences? The Eluhain, Aron v'kapora sukruvim. The first temple had the holy ark in it with its golden cover and angel figures attached to that. The Eish and fire, meaning heavenly fire, was present in the first Beis Hamikdash and not in the second Beis Hamikdash. Ushchina. Shchina is a reference to a divine presence. Again, that's a somewhat abstract idea, but it was missing in the second temple. Veruach HaKodesh, a divine spirit, which is something, let's say, similar in a manner of speaking to prophecy. And Veurim V'tumim. And the stones of the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, Tosfos points out the stones were there, but they did not light up miraculously as they did in the first temple when questions were posed to this breastplate. The answer would be supplied by its lighting up. That didn't take place in the second Beis Hamikdash. So our question is, how can you say that in the second Beis Hamikdash the heavenly fire appeared as a crouching dog when there was no heavenly fire? The Gemara answers, Amri, in Me'avahavi, it was there. However, Suei Lo Messiah, it didn't offer any support. It didn't as opposed to in the first Beis HaMikdash, that heavenly fire contributed to the, we'll call the fire power of the altar. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the fire was there, but it didn't add to the fire power of the altar. We continue with a new topic. We mentioned fire, so in connection with fire, the topic heading on the side, we have Shesh Eishos Hain. There were six types of fire. Shesh Eishos Hain. Yesh Oicheles V'Eino Shoise. And what we should point out, that we'll present the list, and then the Gemara elaborates as we go on. So there were six types of fire. Yesh Oicheles V'Eino Shoise. There's a type of fire that consumes but doesn't drink, it doesn't tolerate water. V'Yesh Shoise V'Eino Cheles. There's a kind of fire that will not be affected by water, but it doesn't burn things up. V'Yesh Oicheles V'Shoise. There's a kind of fire that does both. It consumes and it consumes items. It burns up items, and it drinks water too. If there's water, won't affect it. V'Yesh Oicheles Lachen Kiveshen. There's a type of fire that will consume wet fuel as if it were dry, as it does dry wood. V'Yesh Eish Doiche Eish. There's a type of fire that pushes other fires away. V'Yesh Eish Oicheles Eish. And there's a kind of fire that will consume other fires. Now, a lot of this needs explanation. So we go over the list. Yesh Eish Oicheles V'Eino Shoise. There is a fire that consumes, that burns, but it doesn't drink. In other words, it doesn't stand up against water. Hadidon, that's common fire. Common fire burns things up, but it will be extinguished by water. Shoise V'Eino Oicheles, a fire that drinks but doesn't consume, that's D'Choylin. Here you need a little imagination. Imagine a feverish individual. A feverish individual needs to drink a lot, but the body, the person, remains intact. Oicheles v'shoise, a fire that burns and also absorbs water, drinks water, so to speak, that's de'elio. That's the fire in the time of the prophet Elio. D'chtiv, there was an event where Elio was challenged by the false prophets, the Nevi'ah Baal, and he set up a ceremonial sacrifice in Har HaKarmel, and it says in the pasuk there, V'es HaMayim Asher Batala Lochka, the offering that Elio Hanavi made. What happened was a fire descended from heaven, and it consumed the water. He was trying to make a point opposite or to defeat the false prophets. So the miracle that happened was such that a heavenly fire came and consumed even the water that Elio had set up to make his point, that his sacrifices will be consumed even though they're drenched with water. So that there was a moat of water that he poured, that he set up around his sacrifices. The heavenly fire in that particular miraculous incident consumed the water as well. So it consumed the sacrifices, the sacrifice that Elio offered, plus the water that he had set up to increase the level of miracle and certainty that he was correct. The fourth fire, Oicheles Lachen Kiveshen, that we saw before, is that's the Marocha. That was the fire of the Marocha. It was one of the five things that we pointed out before concerning the Eish of the Marocha. Yesh Eish Doiche Eish. You have a case of a fire pushing aside another fire. Zed Di Gavriel. Rashi points out that Gabriel is the name of an angel. He descended to save the three tzaddikim, Hanan, Mishael, Azariah, that had been cast by Nebuchadnezzar into a furnace, and he came down, and the angel is a fiery entity, if you will, and he pushed away the fire of the furnace, thereby saving Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So that's a case of fire, the angel Gabriel pushing away the fire of the furnace of Nebuchadnezzar. And finally, V'yesh Eish Ochel Es Eish, fire that consumes other fire, the Shekhinah, the divine fire. And there's a reference, very short reference, Yom HaMor, Hoshit Etzbo B'nei Vesof, and this is a reference to the angels that had questioned the value in creating man. Upon hearing that, the Almighty responded by destroying those angels, and we said the angels themselves were represented something of a fiery nature. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu is, we'll say, the divine presence, also a form of fire. Again, all of this is mystical, it's abstract, but we have to deal with the text as it is. The divine fire consumed the angel, the angelic fire. We ask a question. We quote from the source we had earlier. We said regarding the Oshan HaMarocha. The Oshan HaMarocha, Afilu Kol Harucha Shebo'ilam, Ein Mezizas Oisoi Mimakoman, said that the smoke rising from the Marocha, and this, by the way, is a quote that we had back on Omid Aleph. You'll notice the second to last narrow line of the Gemara back on Omid Aleph mentioned this, that the smoke rising from the Marocha would not be affected by any of the winds. Ein Mezizos wouldn't push the fire out of place. In other words, if that be the case, you'd have to just imagine a fireplace with a pillar of smoke rising as a pillar of smoke. And even as the winds blew, it remained rising in a pillar form. Well, we're going to ask now, is that really so? The Ha'omar Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avdimi, the Motzoi Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag, the day after the last day of Sukkot. Chag is Sukkot, so we're talking about the day after Sukkot. Hakol Tsoifin L'Oshan Hamarocha, everyone would look upon the smoke rising from the Marocha. And here we dashed underline the key word. Noita klapit safon, if it veered northerly, in other words, there was a wind blowing, pushing the pillar of smoke of the Marocha northerly. So aniyim smechin u balei batim atzevim, the poor would be, that would be a sign of that which is coming in the upcoming season. Things would be positive. And before we go any further, we should note that the smoke of the Marocha served as a sign of that which was going to happen in the upcoming year. So if it was note klapi tzafon, if it was veering northwards, it would be a wind coming from the south, blowing northerly. That's called a ruach dreimus. What that meant was there would be an abundant amount of fruit, and so much so that you wouldn't be able to store it up because it would rot. So the great abundance would be a source of happiness, of joy for the aniyim, for the impoverished. Ubali batim atzevim, and the store owners who ordinarily sold fruits and profited from it, atzevim, they were saddened. A situation where the southerly wind is blowing at the Motsoi Sukkis indicates a year of bountiful rainfall. Uperosein markiven, and as we explained, because of the vast amount of rain and fruits, they wouldn't be able to store up their fruits. Things would rot, and hence they would be made available to the public very cheaply. Not a klapi doron, there'll be a northerly wind is blowing, causing the Oshan HaMarocha to veer southerly, to tilt southwise. Aniyim atzevim balibatim smechim. The opposite is the case here. There'll be little rainfall, and hence they would be able to the little fruit that grew, they would be able to store it up without fear of it rotting. Noto klapi mizrach, akol smechin, if the pillar veered eastward. Now, veering eastward would be a function of the west wind blowing, so everyone was happy. Klape marov, hakol atzeven. If it would veer westward, that's a function of the east wind blowing, hakol atzeven. And that's a function of things, the eastern wind caused things to dry out. And everyone would be saddened by that. When the western wind blew, as we say, it was not the klape mizrach, everyone was happy. It was a type of, it was called a balanced wind, and would bring a proper amount of rain. Not so much so that it would cause the produce to rot, and enough for the store owners to profit as well. The question, though, has been asked: how can you say that there was a miracle that all the winds would blow and it wouldn't mezizis oisei mimekaymoi, when you see here that the Oshon did veer in different directions and people waited to see which direction it would veer to know what kind of year was ahead of them? So the Gemara answers that the ozil v'osi kedikli v'avduri lo hava mivdar. There was a miracle here, namely the pillar of smoke did tilt in different directions. However, it didn't. Avduri means scatter. Avduri lo hava mivdar. It didn't scatter. That's a miracle that the smoke rose as a beam. If you can imagine maybe you're familiar with a search beam that you see sometimes at night. It's like, it appears as a pillar of light that is moving and tilted in different directions. So that's what this pillar of smoke appeared as. It was, even in the face of winds, it remained as a pillar, but it did veer in different directions as a pillar. Omar Mor. Now we're going to discuss, we're going to bring into question some of the points we made before just now regarding the smoke serving as a sign of what the year was going to bring. So Omar Mar, Klape Mizrach Akol Smechen, Klape Marav Akol Atzeven. We said that if it veers eastward, means a westerly wind, everyone was happy. If it was a westerly wind, everyone was happy. Klape Marov means an easterly wind, so everyone was saddened because it dries everything out. So now, we ask. Now, you have to pay attention in this Gemara to that which we've written in between the lines, and especially that which we dashed underline. So we raise a question. Now, we have a source for Aminu. This source will feature the different kinds of winds. There is that which needs to be emphasized and that which needs to be de-emphasized. We're going to try to do that with our markings and the use of brackets. And in fact, you have a approach taken by Rashi which focuses the question just to the issue of the easterly wind. The Rach points out that the problem, the contradiction that we're going to raise, is applicable to the westerly wind as well. But we want to keep things as simple as possible. We're going to focus on the issue of the easterly wind. So up till now, you have to read what we wrote between the lines. The Ruach Mizrachis, above the term Klapei Marav, so Ruach Mizrachis, everyone was sad because it dries things out. V'Raminu, Mizrachis, Li'oilum Yofe. Here, right away, you see the contradiction. Easterly wind is always good. Marovis, westerly wind, lo'olam koshe. Brackets, you see, taking you down to the last line. The main thing is the question has been asked already. The Gemara answers afterwards, lo kashe. There's no contradiction. It depends in what country you live. Ha'olon v'ha'lohu. In Bavel, we will answer the easterly wind is okay. It's fine. It's good. You say it has this drying out capacity. Well, Bavel was a place that was a very damp, very wet region. So it wasn't affected by this easterly wind that had the capacity of drying things out because of the abundance of wetness there. Eretz Yisrael, though, which is basically an arid country that needs rainfall, and it doesn't have natural dampness in it. So an easterly wind that will dry things out is negative. So now, having said that, we saw the answer, we saw the question, the contradiction, and we see the answer. Let's now go over the rest of the source. In the brackets, Ruach Tzvoinis, the northerly wind, Yofel Lechitim, Bishol Sheviu Shlish. When you have a northerly wind blowing, my assumption would be at the time of Motsoi Sukkis, or it might refer to even beyond that, but the northerly wind is okay for Chitim Bishol Sheviu Shlish if they have grown a third. So once they've grown a third and a northerly wind blows, it's good for the wheat. The Koshel Zaysim Bismat Shehain Chultin. This northerly wind is bad for the olives when they have Chultim is an early stage of their development when the olives have blossomed. Ruach Dremes Koshel Lechitin Bishol Sheviu Shlish. The southerly wind is negative for wheat when it has developed a third, and it's good for the zaysim when they have blossomed. So it's quite the opposite, that the northerly wind is good for the chit and bad for the zaysim, and southern wind is bad for the wheat and good for the olives. The Omar of Yosef Itemo Morzutra, Rav Yosef, some have as a version Morzutra, says the simonech, the way to remember this, which wind is good for what? Remember the following. Shulchan b'tzafon, menor b'dorom. The shulchan, which held the breads, the lechem aponim, was breads made of wheat. The shulchan stood in the northern part of the hechal. So you have north associated with bread, i.e. wheat. What did it say in the source? That the northerly wind was beneficial to the wheat if it grew a third. And the menorah, the candelabra, which was fueled by olive oil, coming from olives, stood in the southern part. That's menorah b'dorom, stood in the southern part of the heichal. So which wind is good for the olives? If you note the source, it said it was good for the zaysim. We, in our markings, we double underlined the word yofet to draw your attention to what is good for what. So the southern wind is good for the olives. The menorah, which was fueled by olive oil, stood in the southern part of the hechal. Hai marba didei, v'hai marba didei. Marba means grows or raises. Namely, the northerly wind is good for that which is in the north, namely the shulchan is good for the chita, and the southern wind will raise the olives which were associated with the menorah that stood in the south. And as we mentioned before, as far as the issue of the contradiction regarding the easterly wind, lo kashya ha'lon v'ha'luhu, for the B'nai Bavel, it was good, it was okay, it was not injurious, and for the B'nai Eretz Yisrael, it was injurious. This is the conclusion of the first parak of Yuma, and before we conclude, just let us remind you, if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.